cabin A-137. I checked the plaque on the wall to see which direction I needed to go to get to the room my grandfather had occupied, using the guide map the clerk had given me as reference. The key card from the safety deposit box no longer worked, which, I mean, was to be expected. But my words and charm still did, so hey, thank God. There was a maid replacing linen in one of the open rooms down the hall. I approached her with ease, telling her that, you know, I had left the room with my card key in my jacket pocket, or so I thought. Silly me. And I tried to look mildly embarrassed as I patted myself down, still searching for that elusive key. Yet it's the damnedest thing. I was meeting a friend in the lobby, and I added, for, you know, good measure, I forgot it. I flashed a smile, hoped she understood what I was getting at, and finished with, what do you say? Show a little mercy. I try to sound like that priest from that show that everybody loved, where he was, like, sexy and, like, charming and, I think, Irish. And I'm deeply disappointed in myself to say that it actually worked. It was as easy as that. Where I thought I would find answers, though, I was left with puzzling contradictions. The room, like the rest of the ship, was perfect. Nothing odd about it, nothing eerie that might trouble a fragile mind. A room. It was just a room. That's all it was. No matter how hard I searched and scrutinized, I couldn't find a single clue. That is, until I searched the closet closest to the door. Because I knew from past experience that small items were invariably left behind on the upper shelf, often unseen by tiny housekeepers, like the blushing maid who let me in. I'm starting to realize that people have really low standards. Anyway, I had thought I might find a scrap of paper or something in my grandfather's writing, but instead I found that my fingernails chipped away the same crusted color that had been smeared on the card key. The same. It hit me like a punch in the gut. Like I was back in the ring at Grillo's. It was blood. Just as in the padded room, my grandfather was marking the way with blood. I couldn't get a clear look. Come on, you son. I couldn't get a clear look at what was written there, but I did have my camera. So by using my camera, the flash illuminating the darkness like a celestial event, I ended up unlocking more puzzling clues. Ones that would take me into the restricted bowels of the ship. My eyes studied the image captured by the digital camera, drawn of my grandfather's hand in once crimson life. It was a poorly reconstructed section of the guide map that the clerk had thrust at me earlier. The small plastic rectangular stand that was propped in front of the pamphlets had referenced to the sheet as a self-guided and audio tour guide map. It was almost as if my grandfather was guiding me from beyond the grave. I stared at it again. At the image, perhaps a bit too bright from the flash, but easily understood. My grandfather's unwavering finger had recreated the immortal chaplain's sanctuary, a section of the ship on A deck close to the bow from how it looked. And there was a determined, bold-stroked X that matched the upside-down red triangle on the map tucked away in my pocket. An upside-down triangle with the number 11 written inside, again in those same bold strokes. If my face wasn't contorted in determination and more than a little apprehension. I would have smirked. I honestly think I would have. But this wasn't an adventure. I wasn't having fun. The clues weren't going to lead me to forgotten relics of old or treasures with an ancient truth which amazed historians and the world alike. I believed that my grandfather believed that he was being stalked while he was here on the Queen Mary, tormented by an evil poltergeist, some dark entity, take your pick. And truth was, up until a few hours ago, I would have called the old man my grandfather since before the funeral a crackpot, a nut job. Crazy. I couldn't do it anymore. Not now. Not after what I've heard, what I had felt, what I had seen. My grandpa stood right where I was now, splitting his flesh and staining a, for the most part, hidden wall, believing the day would come when someone could follow the path laid out. The truth of my grandfather's madness. And although I wasn't... Oh, man. And although I had told myself over and over and over again that I wasn't fully convinced that the Queen Mary was truly haunted by spirits and ghosts, being the good little skeptic that I was, I had a feeling that I would find the truth out soon enough. Because the clerk was right. X did mark the spot. Whispers in the Cries. Written and performed by Matthew Ewald. Produced by Star Chaser Productions. A-Deck. I found my way along the starboard side of the ship. A-Deck wasn't all that crowded at this time of day, evidently. And after a few dozen strides, there were hardly any tourists there at all. Matter of fact, when I glanced down the long corridor from bow to stern, there was no one. I was alone. Or so I thought. I kept up a steady stride, suddenly hearing a familiar voice.
I heard you have quite the photograph.
I almost skidded to a stop, turning and looking over my shoulder. Abigail was still moving forward. I must have passed her amidst the throngs, and then I guess she had finally caught up to me. For the briefest of moments, I was lost to her beauty again. That smile and those weary but loving eyes. The overall calming sense her presence brought. And it was this sedating tone that allowed me to realize that I could tell this woman anything. Anything and everything. But most of all, and for whatever reason, I felt that she needed to know. That she needed to know me. And so I started slow, not intentionally trying to build suspense, but slow enough to guarantee that Abigail wouldn't run in the opposite direction, the girl who cried lunatic, when she heard what I was about to say. Hoping that she didn't give me a dose of pepper spray before doing so. I just wanted to spare her any of the grotesqueries. The crazy. And I certainly couldn't lie to myself because it did. It did sound crazy. It all sounded crazy. But I continued, putting my faith in Abigail where others, if not all, didn't in my grandfather. Including myself. Abigail listened without interruption as I told her just about everything. Not counting a phone call to Grillo's. I told her about the eerie photograph, my learning about my grandfather being committed before his sudden suicide, the funeral, and the contents of the safety deposit box. I told her just about as much as a sane person could. Abigail's eyes widened as I described what happened to the tour guide and stayed that way even as I backtracked to phantom specters in the Minnesota library and nightmarish reflections in car windows. I hated how she looked at me that way. But by this time, we were in the hotel lobby, and as Abigail finally spoke, things took a darker turn.
They made the ship a historic landmark,
she said.
Bring your family, bring your friends. Take a ghost tour. A lot of people have walked down these halls, but no one really knows their secrets. Their true secrets. Because no one will ask the questions. No one will dig for the answers. It's like...
Like what? I prodded, looking her square in the eye.
Randy, it's like they're terrified of what they would find.
She laughed then, one that was sad, hopeless, and lost all at the same time. I couldn't know of her thoughts just then, but I selfishly hoped that Abigail kept thinking about how she truly cared for the man that she had just met standing before her, how she must have truly cared for me, crazy or not. That maybe ghosts didn't frighten her. But the thing that did scare her, her attraction to me.
So why aren't you frightened? Why are you in such a hurry to rush off and follow all of these clues?
She laughed at the absurdity of it all.
After everything that you've seen, everything that's happened, everything that you've experienced, why can't you just walk away?
Mm-mm. No. There's something else. What aren't you telling me? She leaned inward and took my hand. The touch was electric.
They're just stories,
she said.
You work here long enough, and you hear things. People making stories out of sounds. Although I don't put much stock into it either. Sometimes you can't deny what you feel in your gut. Sometimes you can only lie to yourself so much.
She looked back up into my eyes, a different emotion now swimming in their beauty.
I'm not saying the ship is haunted, but there is something here. So I'm asking you, let it go. This is a truly beautiful ship. But there are miles of dark and nothing else far below us. Don't lose yourself in it.
Although her attempts to warn me of the dangers that lay ahead might have failed, she wasn't about to give up on me. She understood that I was unfaltering when it came to this quest to unlock the mystery surrounding my grandfather's death. The mystery of that dark character in the top hat who had driven the old man to madness. I would not fail my grandfather again. She knew that. She knew it. And in turn, she would not fail me. And so it was that we both continued to a sanctuary whose name held several meanings. Together, we would brave the dark. Together, with caution in each step, we continued forward into the limbo of this phantasmagorical world. immortal chaplain sanctuary. Stories and tales told, one clue leading to another, one clue leading to a sanctum that Abigail and I now found ourselves within. The Immortal Chaplain Sanctuary was dedicated to the memory of four chaplains, each of different faiths, Jewish, Catholic, Methodist, and Protestant. Four men who had given up their own life jackets, their very survival, so that other soldiers may live. These chaplains remained with the 672 men who perished. They remained together through fire and cold, through bloodshed and screams. There were four immortal chaplains last seen arm in arm in prayer as the USAT Dorchester, a troop ship, was torpedoed and sank into the cold, merciless waters of the North Atlantic on February 3, 1943. The Queen Mary was also a troop ship during World War II, and history would say that she was the most successful of the war, having carried close to 1 million soldiers into combat. But that was not all she carried. The Queen Mary carried U.S. soldiers, as well as the crew of the German U-boat 223, which was responsible for the sinking and destruction of the USAT Dorchester the very year before. She carried the souls and memory of the dead. And as Abigail and I searched the sanctuary for the clues my grandfather had left behind, his sanctuary or not, we were searching for the dead. I wondered which lost souls of the past were awaiting me in the darkness. This madness I found myself within. I wondered why my grandfather would desecrate a sanctuary meant to honor and protect. As I stared at another image stained by blood and hidden from sight, presumably pointing the way to the answers I so desperately sought, I wondered why those answers were pointing the way down. And as I stared at another image stained by blood and hidden from sight, presumably pointing the way to the answers I so desperately sought, I wondered why those answers were always pointing the way down. I wondered why they were pointing to hell. Created in two sections, with the first depicting the deepest level of the hall, was another poorly recreated section of the Queen Mary. A location circled, but as with the notation on the guide map in my back pocket, a void of nothingness. The outline of the ship and nothing more. A white square on a beige-colored map. The second image was that of the deepest level of the hall, but there was no void, no emptiness there. Instead, there were bodies. Hundreds of bodies were crawling upward in the bloody image, smashed together tight, trampled, stacked sickly. A Nazi swastika had been carved into each and every forehead, blood in all directions, from unseen eye sockets to matted hair and contorted mouths. That was the least of it. There was the specter in the top hat, his grin large, spread out across his haunting, blood-stained face, welcoming them from the bow with open arms. Etched from a mad memory, broken nails and fingerprints of blood. The vessel full steam ahead, blotches that represented children all made up to pose with rosy cheeks and sad faces like little dolls. Eerie, persistent, two tiny words to express what the image conveyed, but it did, however, serve its purpose.
Oh my God.
Abigail exclaimed, her eyes widening.
I know this.
Wait, what? How do you know this? She backed up slowly, looking from the ragged red image and then up at me. Back and forth, back and forth, back and forth, a metronome of fear lingering in her eyes, and she suddenly, it was as if she suddenly connected another piece of the puzzle with a stark and startling realization. A separate part of the whole that she had never even realized she held. It was there. The entire time it was just under the surface. Like a body in water. Abigail. I said her name as calm as I could. How? Silence. Sounds around us faded out, as if the two of us had been submerged. And I didn't have the time to ponder the irony of that, because Abigail spoke just then.
Your grandfather told me.